From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. Courage by Forrest Reid. Forrest Reid, the Irish author, wrote several much admired novels: Uncle Stephen, The Bracknells, Apostate, The Retreat, as well as critical studies of W.B. Yeats and Walter de la Mare, and an invaluable book on the illustrations of the 60s. Several of his best tales evoked a lyrical world in which hints of the supernatural are contrasted with the realities of everyday life. A favorite theme was boyhood and the longing for an ideal dream playmate. Courage originally appeared in his book A Garden by the Sea, Stories and Sketches, issued in 1918. When the children came to stay with their grandfather, young Michael Ahern, walking with the others from the station to the rectory, noticed the high gray wall that lined one side of the long, sleepy lane, and wondered what lay beyond it. Far above his head, over the tops of the mossy stones, trees stretched green arms that beckoned to him and threw black shadows on the white, dusty road. His four brothers and sisters, stepping demurely beside tall, rustling Aunt Caroline, left him lagging behind, and when a white bird fluttered out for a moment into the sunlight, they did not even see it. Michael called to them, and Nate's eyes turned straight away to the trees, but were too late. So he trotted on and took fat, tired Barbara's place by Aunt Caroline. "Does anybody live there?" he asked. But Aunt Caroline shook her head. The house, whose chimney he presently caught a glimpse of through the trees, had been empty for years and years. The people to whom it belonged lived somewhere else. Michael learned more than this from Rebecca, the cook, who told him that the house was empty because it was haunted. Long ago, a lady lived there, and she had been very wicked and very unhappy, poor thing, and even now could find no rest in her grave. It was on an afternoon, when he was all alone, that Michael set out to explore the stream running past the foot of the rectory garden. He would follow it, he thought, wherever it led him, follow it just as his father, far away in wild places, had followed mighty rivers into the heart of the forest. The long, sweet green grass brushed against his legs, and a white cow, with a buttercup hanging from the corner of her mouth, gazed at him in mild amazement as he flew past. He kept to the meadow side, and on the opposite bank, the leaning trees made little magic caves tapestried with green. Black flies darted restlessly about, and every now and again he heard strange splashes, splashes of birds, of fish, the splash of a rat, and once the heavy floundering splash of the cow herself, plunging into the water up to her knees. He watched her tramp through the sword-shaped leaves of a bed of irises, while the rich black mud oozed up between patches of bright green weed. A score of birds made a quaint chorus of trills and peeps, chuckles and whistles. A wren like a tiny winged mouse flitted about the ivy-colored bole of a hollow elm. Then Michael came unexpectedly to the end of his journey, for an iron gate was swung here right across the stream, and on either side of it, as far as he could see, stretched a high gray wall. He paused. The gate was padlocked, and its spike bars were so narrow that to climb it would not be easy. Suddenly a white bird rose out of the burning green and gold of the trees, and for a moment in the sunlight it was the whitest thing in the world. Then it flew back again into the mysterious shadow, and Michael stood breathless. He knew now where he was, knew that this wall must be a continuation of the wall in the lane, The stooping trees leaned down as if to catch him in their arms. He looked at the padlock on the gate and saw that it was half-eaten by rust. He took off his shoe and stockings. Stringing them about his neck, he waded through the water, and with a stone struck the padlock once, twice. Twice only, for at the second blow, the lock dropped into the stream with a dull splash. Michael tugged at the rusty bolt, and in a moment or two the gate was open. On the other side, he clambered up the bank to put on his shoes, and it was then that, as he glanced behind him, he saw the gate swing slowly back in silence. That was all, yet it somehow startled him, and he had a fantastic impression that he had not been meant to see it. Of course, it must have moved of its own weight, he told himself, but it gave him an uneasy feeling as of someone following stealthily on his footsteps, and he remembered Rebecca's story. Before him was a dark, moss-grown path, like the narrow side of a huge cathedral whose pillars were the overarching trees. It seemed to lead on and on through the endless green stillness, and he stood dreaming on the outermost fringe, wondering, doubting, not very eager to explore further. He walked on, and the noise of the stream died away behind him, like the last warning murmur of the friendly world outside. Suddenly turning at an abrupt angle, he came upon the house. It lay beyond what had once been a lawn, and the grass, coarse and matted, grew right up to the doorsteps, which were green, with gaping apertures between the stones. Ugly, livid stains, lines of dark moss and lichen, crept over the red bricks, and the shutters and blinds looked as if they had been closed forever. Then Michael's heart gave a jump, for at that moment an uneasy puff of wind stirred one of the lower shutters, which flapped back with a dismal rattle. He stood there while he might have counted 100, on the verge of flight, poised between curiosity and fear. At length, curiosity, the spirited adventure, triumphed, and he advanced to a closer inspection. When his nose pressed to the plain, he gazed into a large dark room, across which lay a band of sunlight, thin as a stretched ribbon. He gave the window a tentative push, and to his surprise it yielded. Had there been another visitor here, he wondered, for he saw that the latch was not broken. Must have been drawn back from within, or forced very skillfully, in some way that had left no mark upon the woodwork. He made these reflections, and then, screwing up his courage, stepped across the sill. Once inside, he had a curious sense of relief. He could somehow feel that the house was empty, that not even the ghost of a ghost lingered there. Was this certainty? Everything dropped consolingly yet half disappointedly back into the commonplace, and he became conscious that outside it was broad daylight, and that ghost stories were nothing more than a kind of fairy tale. He opened the other shutters, letting the rich afternoon light pour in. Though the house had been empty for so long, it smelled sweet and fresh. Not a speck of dust was visible anywhere. He drew his fingers over the top of one of the little tables, but it was so clean that it might have been polished that morning. He touched the faded silks and curtains and sniffed at faintly smelling china chars. Over the wide carved chimney piece hung a picture of a lady, very young and beautiful. She was sitting in a chair, and beside her stood a tall, delicate boy of Michael's own age. One of the boy's hands rested on the lady's shoulder, and the other held a gilt-clasped book. Michael, gazing at them, easily saw that they were mother and son. The lady seemed to him infinitely lovely, and presently she made him think of his own mother, and with that he began to feel homesick, and all kinds of memories returned to him. They were dim and shadowy, and as he stood there dreaming, it seemed to him that somehow his mother was bound up with this other lady. He could not tell how, and at last he turned away, wishing that he had not looked at the picture. He drew from his pocket the letter he had received that morning. His mother was better. She would soon be quite well again. Yesterday she had been out driving for more than an hour, she told him, and today she felt a little tired, which was why her letter must be rather short. And he remembered through a sense of menacing trouble only half realized during those days of unease, waiting in the silent rooms at home, only half realized, even at the actual moment of goodbye, remembered that last glimpse of her face, smiling so beautifully and bravely. He went out into the hall and unbarred and flung wide the front door before ascending to the upper stories. He found many curious things, but above all, in one large room, he discovered a whole store of toys, soldiers, puzzles, books, a bow and arrows, a musical box with a little silver key lying beside it. He wound it up, and a gay, sweet melody tinkled out into the silence, thin and fragile, losing himself in the vast, empty house like the flicker of a taper in a cave. He opened a door leading into a second room, a bedroom, and sitting down in the window seat, began to turn the pages of an old illuminated volume he found there, full of strange pictures of saints and martyrs, all glowing in gold and bright colors, yet somehow sinister and disquieting. It was with a start that as he looked up he noticed how dark it had become indoors. The pattern had faded out of the chintz bed curtains, and he could no longer see clearly into the further corners of the room. It was from these corners that the darkness seemed to be stealing out, like a thin smoke, spreading slowly over everything. Then a strange fancy came to him, and it seemed to him that he had lived in this house for years and years, and that all his other life was but a dream. It was so dark now that the bed curtains were like pale shadows, and outside, over the trees, the moon was growing brighter. He must go home. He sat motionless, trying to realize what had happened, listening, for it was as if the secret hidden heart of the house had begun very faintly to beat. Faintly at first, a mere stirring of the vacant atmosphere, yet, as the minutes passed, it gathered strength, and with this consciousness of awakening life, a fear came also. He listened in the darkness, and though he could hear nothing, he had a vivid sense that he was no longer alone. Whatever had dwelt here before had come back, was perhaps even now creeping up the stairs. A sickening, stupefying dread paralyzed him. It had not come for him, he told himself, whatever it was. It wanted to avoid him, and perhaps he could get downstairs without meeting it. Then it flashed across his mind, radiantly, savingly, that if he had not seen it by now, it was only because it was avoiding him. He sprang to his feet and opened the door. Not the door leading to the other room, but one giving on the landing. Outside the great well of the staircase was like a yawning pit of blackness. His heart thumped as he stood clutching at the wall, with shut eyes, lest he should see something he had no desire to see. He took two steps forward and gripped the balusters. Then, with the eyes still tightly shut, he ran quickly down, quickly, recklessly, as if fire was burning his heels. Down in the hall, the open door showed as a dim silver-gray square, and he ran to it, but the instant he passed the threshold, his panic left him. A fear remained, but it was no longer blind and brutal. It was as if a voice had spoken to him. And as he stood there, a sense that everything swayed in a balance, that everything depended upon what he did next, swept over him. He looked up at the dark, dreadful staircase. Nothing had pursued him, and he knew now that nothing would pursue him. Whatever was there was not there for that purpose. And if he were to see it, he must go in search of it. But if he left it now, he knew that he should leave something else as well. In forsaking one, he should forsake both. In losing one, he should lose both. Another spirit at this moment was close to him, and it was the spirit of his mother, who, invisible, seemed to hold his hand and keep him there upon the step. But why? Why? He could only tell that she wanted him to stay. But of that he was certain. If he were a coward, she would know. It would be impossible to hide it from her. She might forgive him. She would forgive him. But it could never be the same again. He steadied himself against the side of the porch. The cold moonlit washed through the dim hall and turned it to a glimmering grayness, the lowest flight of steps. With sobbing breath and wide eyes, he retraced his steps, but at the foot of the stairs he stopped once more. The grayness ended at the first landing. Beyond that, an impenetrable blackness led to those awful upper stories. He put his foot on the lowest stair, and slowly, step by step, he mounted. Clutching the balusters, he did not pause on the landing, but walked on into the darkness, which seemed to close about his slight figure like the heavy wings of a monstrous tomb. On the uppermost landing of all, the open doors allowed a faint light to penetrate. He entered the room of the toys and stood beside the table. The beating of the blood in his ears almost deafened him. If only it would come now, he prayed, for he felt that he could not tolerate the strain of waiting. But nothing came. There was neither sight nor sound. At length he made his final effort, and crossing to the door, which was now closed, turned the handle. For a moment the room seemed empty, and he was conscious of a sudden and immense relief. Then, close by the window seat, in the dim twilight, he perceived something. He stood still, while a deathly coldness descended upon him. At first, hardly more than a shadow, a thickening of the darkness. What he gazed upon made no movement, and so long as it remained thus, with head mercifully lowered, he felt that he could bear it. But the suspense tortured him, and presently a faint moan of anguish rose from his dry lips. With that, the gray, marred face, the face he dreaded to see, was slowly lifted. He tried to close his eyes, but could not. He felt himself sinking to the ground and clutched at the doorpost for support. Then suddenly he seemed to know that it too, this thing, was afraid, that what it feared was his fear. He saw the torment, the doubt, and despair that glowed in the smoky dimness of those hollow, dreadful eyes. How changed was this lady from the bright, beautiful lady of the picture. He felt a pity for her, and as his compassion grew, his fear diminished. He watched her move slowly towards him, nearer, nearer. Only now there was something else that mingled with his dread, battled with it, overcoming it, and when at last she held out her arms to him, held them wide in a supreme, soundless appeal, he knew that it had conquered. He came forward and lifted his face to hers. At the same instant she bent down over him and seemed to draw him to her. An icy coldness, as of a dense mist, enfolded him, and he felt and saw no more. When he opened his eyes, the moon was shining upon him, and he knew at once that he was alone. He knew, moreover, that he was now free to go. But the house no longer held any terror for him, and as he scrambled to his feet, he felt a strange happiness that was very quiet and a little like that he used to feel when, after he had gone up to bed, he lay growing sleepier and sleepier while he listened to his mother singing. He must go home, but he would not go for a minute or two yet. He moved his hand, and it struck against a box of matches lying on the table. He had not known they were there, but now he lighted the tall candles on the chimney piece. And as he did so, he became more vividly aware of what he had felt dimly ever since he had opened his eyes. Some subtle atmospheric change had come about, though in what it consisted he could not at once tell. It was like a hush in the air, the strange hush which comes with falling of snow. But how could there be snow in August? And moreover, this was within the house, not outside. He lifted one of the candlesticks and saw that a delicate powder of dust had gathered upon it. He looked down at his own clothes. They too were covered with that same thin powder. Then he knew what was happening. The dust of years had begun to fall again, silently, slowly, like a soft and continuous caress, laying everything in the house to sleep. Dawn was breaking when, with a candle in either hand, he descended the broad, widening staircase. As he passed out into the garden, he saw lanterns approaching, and knew they had come to look for him. They were very kind, very gentle with him, and it was not till the next day that he learned of the telegram which had come in his absence.